You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up, we'll hear from some amazing adults, too, who are supporting kids around them.
Now, a really well-written comic book has great characters, compelling art, a tight storyline, and often conflict between the forces of good and evil.
The Hawk is a new entry into that world of comic book superheroes and villains, and the author is getting quite a bit of attention, despite still being in high school.
William Miles is the author of The Hawk and a senior at Fenimore High School. When we talked, I asked him how he first got hooked on comic books.
It was on a little rack in Piggly Wiggly down in Dodgeville back when it was... They still had comic book racks. Like, it was one small rack, and I used to get the Amazing Spider-Man. It was a comic that was going on at that time, and a couple other miscellaneous titles, but mostly it was Spider-Man. I grew up with Spider-Man. So,
when did you first start creating your own images and stories?
It was seventh grade. I mean, it was really nothing. You know, it was nothing really that big, but it was I was sitting in the middle of math class, as you do, and I was bored, and I wasn't paying attention to the teacher because I don't like math. The idea came into my head that this is what I want to do. I don't know why I'm waiting. You know, I want to do this in life. So it came then, and then later in life, I decided to actually pursue it.
Yeah, so it's one thing to, you know, just draw during math class.
Yeah.
What led you to this project of creating a comic book, not a web only? I mean, I'm looking at a print version
I got two physical ones right here, yeah.
This is a big job. What led you to say, okay, I'm going to actually make a comic book?
Well, I was going through some pretty hard times back in... I moved from my old school, Dodgeville High, to Fenimore High. There was a lot going on there. And I decided, instead of being really angry about what was going on, I kept on saying, I really want to do this. So why not do it? You know what I mean? Why? And this will help deal with some inner demons that are going on at the time. And then after I was even over that, I decided to keep on going with it. And I was finally able to produce a full 24-page comic.
Now let's meet the Hawk. Tell us about your superhero here.
So the Hawk, his name is Ryan Vlory, and he is from Madison, Wisconsin. The comic takes place in Madison, Wisconsin. So it is about a young boy who is raised by a mentally and physically abusive father named James Vlory, who runs all crime trade in Madison. He's like the biggest boss of Madison. He deals with all crime whatsoever. So he decides that he wants his son to be like that too, but his son doesn't want to be like that. And so as he starts to grow up, he realizes that's not who I am. That's not who I want to be, you know, kind of starting things off. And then without kind of spoiling things from there, things get messy.
Right. So. I mean, this is a protagonist with some inner demons and definite father issues.
Exactly.
Here. Not to spoil anything too much.
Yeah. He's got a lot of family issues.
Narrative-wise, this is fairly complicated because you're in the present, but a lot of that backstory you just shared is in flashback.
Yeah, this very first issue starts in the very beginning. Did you end up reading the comic or no?
I read a good chunk of it, and at the beginning, he's like beating up bad guys and trying to get to the main bad guy. But then we see some of those inciting incidents back at age 6.
Yes. So we start out from the very in the very beginning. We start out with him trying to find his father, and you don't know why. You know what I mean? I'm trying to leave a little bit of mystery. What's going on? You know what I mean? What's happening? From there, we get to see him kind of go back and go over some of these events that happened that led him to where he is now.
Talking to William Miles, senior at Fenimore High School, about his new creation, the self-published comic book, The Hawk. Okay, so that's our character and a taste of the story, again, without spoiling it too much. Now, for people who have never made their own comic book, can you talk about what the challenges are in actually bringing this from ideas in your head to something you can, you know, wrap up and hand to somebody?
Oh my gosh. You know, it was a process because, especially being 17, not knowing anything whatsoever, you know, just deciding to head dive right into this. I actually started this whole thing. We were on a family vacation all the way up in Branson, Missouri.
Okay.
And I was sitting there, and like I said, those events were still bothering me, and then I decided to start doing it there. I had no clue whatsoever what I was going to do. I just went, okay, I can do this, and started plowing through, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, you need to do this, and you need to do that, and you need to do this. And before I knew it, I was probably $500 extra that I did not need to spend. You know what I mean? So if I had to give a tip, there's a couple things. The first thing is make sure to research what you're doing. I mean, there's plenty of forums online that explain, don't do this, because I did that.
You'd already done that.
Yeah, and I regret it now. Like spending too much money or making sure that the artist knows what is the final script. because that was an issue I had sent off the script, and I was like, oh, no, I don't want that in there. You know what I mean? But so make sure you know what you're doing. And the other thing I would say is a lot of people in life, and I'm not trying to be rude by saying this at all, but a lot of people in life, you know, they try to say, well, I can't do it. I got this going on, this going on, this going on. Don't let any of that get in the way. Keep on pushing and pursue what you want to do. If I would have let that happen, I would have given up right in the very beginning.
What was it like the first time you held the completed copy in your hand and, like, you knew? I love the, you know, at the end of Lost, there's a little tag like, I made this. Like, yeah. Is that how you felt then?
I finished it a year later, and just this last summer, we went to Michigan for a family trip, and it came in before I could see it. Like, it came in that week I had ordered it, and I got home, and I want to see it, and I got home, and it's like I gave birth. Like, it was amazing. I couldn't believe that I actually was able to do something like this.
So. And now you were at the Wizard World event. This is a thing, mm-hmm. a lot of comic books, TV show people get together. And you actually have already done a panel on, I love this, super villain psychology, along with a comic book artist, I think a couple psychology PhD people. What was it like being up in that forum?
Well, when I got there, I was like, why did they put me up here with two psychologists? This doesn't make sense. Like, I was surprised that they put me up with two psychologists that know probably way more than a 17-year-old broke kid from Wisconsin. But I got up there. It was a lot of fun. And it was really good, you know, well done with having two psychologists be up there and two writers and art, like a I think an artist and then me, who is a writer, be up there, because it kind of gives both views of how we, you know, create and write and how we perceive these villains. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Now, this was number one of the series,
yes.
The Hawk.
Yep.
Having been through what you went through, is there going to be a 2, 3, and so on?
Now that I know what I'm doing, absolutely. And we have this whole thing together now. But at first, I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do this again. It took a whole year to jump through all these different obstacles and hoops. And finally, I was able to get this out, this very first issue out, and now it's a lot easier. I know what I'm doing. I know where to go. I know how to print. I know how to upload. I know how to get everything out there. So, yeah.
And you said you started this in part because you were going through some stuff.
Yes.
We don't need to break down the details of that, but I hear from people a lot who are dealing with different kinds of things that embracing creativity, doing something artistic, can really help a lot. Did you find that along the way?
Absolutely, because you can either sit and fret about it and do nothing and, like, waste a lot of time doing, you know, being upset with yourself and sitting in a corner and being angry and not getting anything done, or you can take all of that and turn it into a passion that you've wanted to do. Too many people let that go and go, well, I can't do it because I don't have enough time or this or that or any excuse, but really you should just do it. You know what I mean? Especially with anger and being upset and dealing with past trauma or anything of that sort, you should just continue to push. You know what I mean? And use that to keep on showing, like, hey, I can do this. So.
I don't want to put any pressure on you.
You did
the Hawk. You got more Hawk coming.
Yep.
But I imagine somebody like you has other ideas for other heroes in their head. Do you have ideas for, okay, once I get into this a little bit, I have another story I want to pursue?
Yeah, so what's going on right now is this is a part one of part two, to kind of just introduce the character, mm-hmm. to get it out there. And people, I'm getting pretty positive reviews so far. But I would say that, or what I am going to say, is we have this little secret project that's going on behind the scenes with a completely different artist who actually is top of the notch. You know what I mean? He's really, really good. And he's going to be doing volume 2, which is going to be with a bunch of brand new villains, a couple new heroes, new supporting characters, villains, yeah.
Kind of expanding the universe.
Yes, exactly. That's the plan for the second volume, is to get all these characters out there so you can see truly what his world is like in Madison, Wisconsin. And this different, very, very different Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, and for people who want to visit the mean streets of Madison and check out The Hawk, where can they find your work?
They can find it on bigcartel.com/The Hawk. You can buy the comic book on there. And you can go on The Hawk Comics on Instagram. That's where I do a lot of, a lot of fan art's posted. We've had a lot of fan art and, stuff like that, like promoting and advertising's on there.
People are already doing fan art.
Yeah, I have a lot of fan art. That was coming before the book was coming. I think people like the way the character looks. I mean, I think he looks pretty awesome, so yeah.
That was teen comic book author William Miles. It's a cool book and hero. I'm looking forward to seeing issue number 2. Coming up, we'll talk to the creator of the Beyond Beautiful movement.
Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk to the creator of a community garden program in Milwaukee that's helping connect kids and young men there with mentors.
First, Dr. Jasmine Zapata is trying to fix the way girls see themselves, and she's traveling the country motivating young people as part of the movement she started that's called Beyond Beautiful.
Dr. Zapata is a UW Health pediatrician and assistant professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Zapata, welcome to Central Time.
Yes, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, start us off with this message you are spreading. You take it on the road. What is the message of Beyond Beautiful?
Yes, Beyond Beautiful means you are more than what people see on the outside. Your true beauty is within, and that's the message that we give.
And what is the problem you see out there that led you to want to tackle this?
Oh, so many things that I've seen. But just briefly, I'll tell you a couple quick pearls. My daughter was born a 25-weeker premature baby. I was due January 2nd. I had her September 20th at only 1.5 pounds. So she was in the ICU for 3 months, had many life-saving surgeries that she needed. And I'm blessed that she survived. But when she was about 5 or 6 years old, she started getting teased at school for some of her scars that she had from surgery. And I'll never forget, she came home really discouraged and defeated, just talking about how her scars make her ugly. And I told her, your scars make you beautiful. It represents all that you've been through. And so I talked to her about the message, your true beauty is not on the outside, but it's what's within. So that's just one story of what got me started with this.
Big picture, do we get a message that hey, this is what beauty is? This is it. Everything else isn't it?
Exactly. When you look at newspapers, when you look at the media, there's so many images of what beauty truly is, and it's really impacting a lot of young women.
Talk about the negative impacts for someone like your daughter.
Yes.
with scars or women of color sometimes who don't
definitely.
Match what's portrayed as beautiful.
Exactly. I was just doing a sleepover with my daughter and a couple friends, and one of the young girls was African American, and she was talking about getting bullied at school and being teased a lot. And one of the things that came up was that she felt ugly in her skin. She said being black made her feel ugly and not beautiful. And to hear that, that's just heartbreaking.
How old are we talking?
She was about 10 years old.
And already she's got that message.
Already, that's the message. Mm-hmm.
How early do we need to start talking to kids about this stuff?
We need to start talking to kids about this as soon as they can start talking in their toddler years. The strategy that we use is called positive youth development. Positive youth development is an evidence-based strategy to help young people feel empowered and become successful in life. And what it is instead of focusing on all that's happened in their past or the things that are wrong, you focus on what strengths do they have, and you really do everything that you can to just uplift and bring out those strengths and really foster those things.
I want to talk more about what you do in your talks and your
yes.
programs, but I want to take it back to that moment.
Yeah.
A parent in that situation, you hear
yes.
this from a 10-year-old kid who feels ugly in their skin.
Yes.
What do you do? What do you say?
Yeah. I just acknowledge that feeling, saying, I'm so sorry that you feel like that, but I'm here to tell you that you are beautiful. You're beautiful on the outside. I love your hair. I love your eyelashes. I love your skin. It's so beautiful. But most importantly, that's not what defines you. What defines you is those things on the inside that people can't see. You're courageous. You're resilient. You're confident. You're talented. All of those inner treasures, that's what matters most. And why this is so important is because those seeds of feeling negative inside or not feeling beautiful within, those are seeds that lead to depression and suicidal thoughts. And I, as a physician in my training, I've seen that a lot. Young girls coming in with suicidal thoughts or suicide attempts.
As a parent of teenagers now, I feel like if I were to say something like that to my kids, there's a lot of eye rolling going on. As kids get older, how do you still communicate that message, but in a way they're not just going to be like, yeah,
yes.
whatever, parent?
Good question. So it's so important to have innovative strategies that can deliver this message. So that's why I started the Beyond Beautiful movement. It's not just conversations. What I've done is I've partnered with performing artists. I have turned the Beyond Beautiful book into a song. So I actually sing and a rap. And also at the events, we play different games, icebreakers. We create an exciting environment. And then we deliver this message in a very fun and exciting way.
Talking to Dr. Jasmine Zapata of Madison about her Beyond Beautiful project. So you're just giving us a sense of what happens at these Beyond Beautiful events.
Yes.
What do you hear from people after? What kind of response do you get?
We are getting some amazing, amazing feedback, especially from the parents, because something unique about our programs is that it's not just for the young girls that come. We invite their parents to come as well. So while we're doing breakout sessions with the girls, we have a real talk. It's not a real talk, but more like a empowerment and support group session with the parents that are there. And we're hearing a lot of great feedback. So not only do the girls feel empowered, but the parents come away with strategies of how they can better support their kids.
Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of things we might do as parents that unwittingly, unintentionally contribute to the problem, like how we talk about, you look beautiful or whatever. How do we do that in ways that don't reinforce all the bad stuff?
Yeah, I think one of the things is just focusing on, again, those inner strengths. That's the biggest message, talking about the things that you have inside that truly make you beautiful. So even having real conversations with your kids about even your own flaws. A lot of times parents, and I'm myself guilty, we give a portrayal that we're perfect and we do everything right, and teaching the kids this is what you should do. But even when you make mistakes, being transparent and telling them what's going on and lessons that they can learn. One of the biggest things we talk about is resilience. When adverse childhood experiences happen or hard things in life happen, instead of giving up, being able to get back up and keep going. And that's resilience. And that's something that makes you beyond beautiful.
Let's talk more about what's at stake. And you started to touch on this. You mentioned that for some kids, this is going to lead to depression, even thoughts of suicide. Can you talk more about what's at stake when it comes to physical and mental health?
Yes. Whew, I'll never forget the time when I was going through my pediatric training when there was a young girl that flew in via the helicopter that brings critically ill patients in. She was a young child and attempted to hang herself, and they found her right before she died, and they brought her in. And I remember I was in the ICU putting in orders and being a part of the team. I was in training at the time, but I was a part of the team helping to revive her. And at that moment, I thought to myself, being a doctor is not enough. This is too late. I'm having contact with her too late. What could I have done, or what are things that we can do to prevent this from happening in the first place? And so there are lives at stake. This is a very, very serious thing that we need to focus on. There's a recent reports that came out that, in fact, Black children, the rates of suicide, completed suicide, has significantly increased over the last several years. And that's something that we really need to take seriously. We need to do everything that we can to talk about this issue and give protective factors and do positive youth development strategies such as these.
So that's part of what the Beyond Beautiful events are about. Do you hear more stories from kids at these events in addition to your own family, your kids' friends who you've seen in your practice? Yes. Are you hearing stories just from kids who show up at these events?
Yes. Even to just, we have a part of our events, and we are also starting to turn this event into courses and curriculum within schools, which is awesome because it gives us a longer time to connect with the students. But one of the things that just strikes me, one of the activities we do is speak positive words of affirmation over the young girls that are there, just walking up to them, telling them, you're beautiful, you're courageous, you're smart, you're intelligent. And it's a kind of a bombardment of positivity. And every event, there's a girl that, just because we tell them, when we start telling them about those positive things, just tears start to fall. And I wonder, what's going on in your life where, just for me to come and tell you, you're beautiful, you're courageous, don't worry about what other people think about you, I believe in you, they're just crying. There's so much going on, and it's so powerful.
And I imagine, I haven't been to these events, I imagine you see lights turn on sometimes with kids,
yes.
I bet. Can you talk about maybe the positive reactions you might get by
yes.
the end of this?
Some of the lights that turn on is, it's awesome because they've received so many messages, sometimes even from your own friends and family, negative messages from the media, just looking at statistics. And then when you have someone coming in saying the total opposite, it causes a little bit of confusion. Like, wait a minute, if this person over here told me I'm stupid, I'm going to drop out, I'm going to get pregnant before I turn 18, all these negative things. But then this group of people's telling me all this wonderful stuff about me. Somebody's not right. So sometimes it even just causes them to question and dig deeper. So that's very positive. And also, as a Black woman who has overcome many, many obstacles and am a physician, there's a lot of times where young girls that are interested in the medical field will look at me and say, oh, wow, I want to be a doctor, too. And it just gives them a realization that they can reach any dream that they set their mind to.
You're working mostly directly with kids and their families, mm-hmm. as you mentioned. Do you have thoughts for the media, us in the media, how we can present beauty and also represent people, like, as you say, a woman of color who's a doctor? Like, how can we paint a better picture of the world for these kids?
Oh, you're going to have to invite me on for longer than this quick segment here, but that's an excellent question. Just to be inclusive in even the music that we listen to that plays on the radio, the CDs that sell. Well, people don't buy CDs anymore. I'm aging myself a little bit. But the records that sell and get playtime, think about the majority of the messages that are in there. What messages are those sending to young people who are listening? If the way that you can be popular and the way that you can be successful is music like this or the images that they're sending, that's a horrible message that it's sending to the young people. So I think one thing that people in media can do is insert positivity into that array of messages. Invite guests to talk about stuff like this. Play music that has a positive message. And that's just some of the things that we could do.
In our last few moments, if there are girls or young women listening with themselves or with their parents, leave them with a quick message.
Yes, I'm going to leave you with the Beyond Beautiful Declaration. Right here in my book, and this is what everything is based off of. Today will be a great day. I'll achieve all I set my mind to. I cannot be stopped. I can do anything I want to because I'm beyond beautiful. I'm beyond beautiful. I'm courageous. I'm resilient. I'm confident. I'm creative. I am talented, intelligent, unique, and innovative. I'm worth it. I deserve it. I am treasured. I am loved. And I deserve every blessing that is coming from above. That's something that I want you to say to yourself every single day. When the world talks about you or it feels like so much negativity is coming at you, you have the power to speak life over yourself. And the words you speak are so powerful. So say that about yourself every day. Doesn't matter what people say on the outside, your true beauty is within.
Dr. Zapata, thanks so much for joining us in the studio.
All right. Thanks for having me, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk about this important topic.
That's Dr. Jasmine Zapata, a Madison-based pediatrician and doctor of preventive and public health medicine. We talked to her about her empowerment movement, Beyond Beautiful, that's taking her around the country to speak to youth. You can find a link to her website with a schedule of coming events linked at WPR.org.
Coming up next, we'll visit a community garden in Milwaukee that brings boys and young men to work in the soil and aims to teach some life lessons along the way. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll meet a Wisconsin social worker turned doll maker who's making special dolls for children with disabilities.
Now let's listen back to one of our favorite interviews of the year. For the last 6 summers, a community garden on Milwaukee's north side has been giving boys and young men a chance to earn money, learn some life skills, and make their neighborhood a better place.
It's part of the volunteer-run program We Got This. Every Saturday for 10 weeks, boys can show up to work in the garden from 8 a.m. to noon, connecting with adult mentors while they do. Andre Lee Ellis is an actor, community organizer, and the founder of We Got This. He joined us from our Milwaukee studio. Andre, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. How you doing?
Well, good. How are you doing today?
Hey, growing and developing.
Well, now you're growing a lot more than vegetables here. But tell us, how did the harvest go this year?
Oh, the harvest was tremendous, and it's still happening. The harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few.
Now, walk us through a Saturday in the garden, a Saturday morning. What happens each week while you're doing this program in the summer?
First thing that happens is that the young men are ages 12 to 16 years old. They have to be there by 8 o'clock. 8 a.m., I shut the gate at 8:00.1 is late, not 8:01. They don't have a minute to be late, but they have all the time before that to be on time. They work for 4 hours. They clean the streets. They walk with mentors that do. We have a topic or a word of the day, and that's what they talk about as they're walking through the neighborhood where they live, and they clean up. They come back and they have discussions on the microphone about what they saw in their neighborhood, what they cleaned up along the way. Then they have discussions where they go off into groups and they have discussions with the mentors about the word of the day and how they can become more productive right on the block where they live. We feed them really, really good. They do the gardening. They weed in the garden. They learn how to grow food. It's just a tremendous opportunity for them to spend some time with men that is lacking, most more than likely lacking in the household.
Now, this is in the 53206 zip code. It's in the news sometimes for not great reasons, crime and poverty, incarceration numbers. You see something, though, behind that, something, a lot of potential and positive things. What do you see?
Well, I recently saw an article that talked about that statistic. That happened in like April, May or something of 2014. We started our program in June 2014, and what happened was, but they did a survey, and some people started saying, based on where 53206 ended up in the survey, that it was the worst place to raise a black child in America. And that is not what the survey or the statistics said. It just clearly talked about incarceration in Wisconsin and what cities were the largest. And because we were number one, because we have a larger population than most other cities or counties, and they labeled it that. But I see something way better, and it's being productive. We went from being the number three highest crime block in the city to not even being on the list. I see love blossoming and growing over there, and you know, and that covers poverty.
What, Andre, got you started doing We Got This?
A mother's cry for help for an 11-year-old boy who was going to be arrested for breaking in cars and things like that. They knocked on my door. I was living on the block where I work at that time. And with that, I asked her, where was the young man's father? And she said, I didn't know. And I said, okay, well, we got this then. We got this. And we went down to the 5th District, and we talked with the liaison officer there at that time. And out of the clear blue, I just said, well, you can't arrest him because I got a new program that I'm starting this Saturday at 8 o'clock, and Jermaine's going to be the first one to start. I'm going to pay him $5 an hour. I'm going to give him $20. He's going to clean up the neighborhood. I described it all. And then when the officer got excited, I love that idea. I need to talk to the captain, see what we could do. What's the name of your program? And out of my mouth came, We Got This.
You have a background as an actor, and it sounds like you must be good at improvising, Andre.
Well, I'm good at being for real, and acting is reacting, and that's what I'm good at. I'm good at reacting, and when it's negative on stage, sometimes you have to turn it around with a positive, or you have to be a quick thinker. And so the acting that I did got me prepared for who I am today, because not only do we grow food and that, but we incorporate entertainment and things like that. We have an event that we do called the 500 Black Tuxedos, and that's where the young men get to dress up and go to dinner in a fine establishment. Thank God for our county executive, Chris Abley, who made it possible, two of the good years that we could go to the Crystal Ballroom in the Hilton. And there I want to be able to incorporate the entertainment and teach the young people in the neighborhood to entertain, dress up, and have fun peacefully.
I read in a piece by James Causey at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, I think it was at one of those tuxedo events, you tapped one of the kids who was working your program as a speaker, and he'd never spoken in front of people before. Can you share that story?
Well, Jalen Green is a young man whose mom, his mom brought him to me, came to the garden. While I was standing there, I looked at him and I said, I see a microphone in your face. You're going to do public speaking and you're going to speak. And then his mother said, no, he's always had a speaking problem and he's very shy because of it. So I said, well, you'll do the opening speech at the tuxedo event. And at the end of his speech, he said, I'm Jalen Green and I approve this message. He was great.
What is it like to see a kid in that case or some of the other stories you've seen step outside their comfort zone and do something that nobody thought they were going to do, that they didn't think they were going to do?
Well, once I asked, I get as many as 100 young boys on a Saturday, or we get as many as 100
wow.
young boys on a Saturday. And once we had 100, and I asked, how many of you don't know your dad? 90 of them raised their hand. How many of you know your dad but still don't have a relationship? 5 more added. Out of 100, only 5 of them knew their dad and possibly had a relationship if they were telling the truth. That's when I developed the slogan, or adopted the slogan, I'm not the birth dad, but I am the earth, Dad. And so what it feels like is I'm a proud father. I'm a proud godfather. I'm a proud community father. Whenever any of them turn it around, sometimes they don't have to do anything different. They could just stop doing some of the negative that they were doing. And when they get a moment to see themselves become a better self, they usually go and grow to that.
Andre Lee Ellis is with us, founder of We Got This, a community garden on Milwaukee's north side offering boys and young men a chance to earn money each Saturday during the summer doing work, cleaning up the community, and getting some mentorship along the way, too. Andre, I wanted to ask about, this isn't just about the kids, this is about the mentors, too. Can you talk about the volunteers who work with you?
You know, if you want to, you know, we spend a lot of time focusing on the negative things about how segregated the city is, the state is, or how much crime and all of that. But here's the positive thing. On a Saturday on that corner, you probably have anywhere from 50 to 200 people within that 4 to 6 hour period that were there that come and share. And they're from all different areas of life. You got families that take vacations that come in there because they've heard about the garden. We've gotten national attention. So the mentors are almost anybody positive. So, you know, have a lot of working people, a lot of people that care, that want to give back, that have skills. So gardeners, mentors are gardeners. Mentors are people that do construction work and want to help build the furniture because we build furniture. Now, let me tell you this here, too. We went from just leasing the land that we have from the city. We now own the land and we own the fruit orchard across the street. As I sit here and speak with you today, mentors and others are there building a hoop house so that we can begin to do food all year round. And across the street is a memorial fruit orchard that features 7 fruit trees. 6 of them honor 6 young black boys that are between the ages of 12 and 25 years old that were a part of our program at some point, and they died due to a tragic death. But the 7th tree, the first tree that you see coming in, is committed to 91-year-old Ruth Arjory Smith, who recently passed away at 91, who had dementia but loved the garden, would come, and my grandson, my 11-year-old grandson, would read to her and play video games with her. So the mentors are important because a lot of the young people have no positive adults around them continuously. So when they come and find that pilots, bus drivers, garbage men, people of good careers and unusual occupations, give them a chance to dream again.
Talk about what it's like for the kids. Maybe they're 12, 13 when they start. They do this work. They come out with $20 in their hands. I got to imagine, a sense of pride in them as they walk away.
The best example I could give you is the very first kid who I rescued. That very first Saturday that he worked, he was the first kid he worked. And that Saturday after he worked, I saw him walking down the street and he was dressed up and he had on all white jeans and a T-shirt. And I could tell he got a fresh haircut. And I rolled up on him and I said, "Jermaine, you look sharp. Where you going?" He said, "Mr. Andre, I got $20. I finally get to go skating." I said, "Really, Jermaine?" He said, "Well, I'll take $5 and I got a haircut." He said, "The other $5, I'm going to take the bus out there and back." He said, "With the other $5, I'll pay my way in and rent my skates." And said, "With the other $5, I can get a hot dog and a soda. I get to go skating." Well, he was financial literacy, said to me. I said, "Well, he knows how to count and he knows how to do business." Well, the next Saturday, he bought 5 more boys, talking about he knew where they could work and get $20 to go skating. Therefore came the program. The pride is big. At the end of every session, I shake every single boy's hand before they are given their $20. The other mentors that are there have to stand in the line. The men, the young men, have to shake their hands, look them in the eyes, and answer whatever question or questions they may have. By the time they get to me, they are prepared to go and do the job interview. And so we pay them. We send them on their way. They feel like they did something. Some of them save their money. Some of them go on to do something else with their money. Some of them come back the next week, and when I give them the 20, they say, "I saved my 10 from last week. I have 30. And I say, "Go get you a bank account." That's the pride increase.
Yeah. Andre, a lot of people will see a problem in their neighborhood, their community, maybe feel bad about it. I don't know. But most people don't take the step you did and take it upon themselves to try to come up with solutions. What is it? What is it that led you to take this on yourself?
Well, I care. I love, and everybody deserves to have a dad. Now, my father died when my mom was 3 months pregnant with me, so I never had the pleasure of knowing my dad or what it was like to really have a dad. I had a stepdad and lots of men in the community, but I always longed to know my real dad. So pretty much, I'm like the young boys in the garden. And when I was younger in school, I wasn't the best student. I was not. Teachers were really upset sometimes when I came to school. They were like, oh, no, you didn't get sick today or something. But I want to tell you, nothing feels better than a young man that was in trouble, getting out of trouble. Just today, if I can, real quick.
Yeah.
Just today, a young man named Ramon who walked past the garden every day, didn't have a book bag going to school, and I knew that he was struggling. His mother came and said he's having so much trouble in school and things like that. So I went and got a book bag. We did book bags this summer, so we made sure that any and everything he needed and then some was in that book bag. I gave him the book bag today, and he said this to me. He said, well, they told me that I have ADHD. And I said, that's why you act like that, because they told you. I said, well, I'm going to tell you what you have. You have STOP, S-T-O-P, and I want you to stop believing that, and I want you to do better. So we gave him the book bag, sent him on. Before I came here, I went over to the school. I said, how's Ramon doing today in school? And they said, you know what? We haven't heard a peep out of him.
Andre, as we wrap up, it's easy to look at a kid in trouble or a community in trouble from the outside and write it off. Say, well, that's a loss, too bad. What would you say to people to say, no, give a second chance there?
If you're not going to pray, then don't have anything to say. If you're not going to help, definitely don't hurt. But children have to be led. And if they're going astray, then somebody's not teaching them or they're not listening. What you don't say and what you don't do may be what they need. Start sweeping the street and then ask them, young man, come hold this dustpan while I sweep up the dirt. Ask them their name and get them involved. Sometimes some people are crying out because they need somebody just to be nice. Don't judge, nudge, and push them forward.
Andre, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, got to get that website out, can I?
Go for it.
www.wegotthismke.com. www.wegotthismke.com. Go there. Learn about us. Give as you wish. We love you.
And we love getting to talk with him. Andre Lee Ellis is the founder of We Got This, a program in Milwaukee that includes a community garden tended by boys and young men in his neighborhood. To find out more, check out a series of articles in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last year by reporter James Causey. You can also visit WeGotThisMKE.com.
Coming up, we'll hear from a Wisconsin woman using her sewing skills and compassion to make dolls for children nationwide who don't see themselves in the dolls on the market.
Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Our next guest has always liked dolls. When she no longer played with them herself, she began sewing them. And today, she's still sewing dolls, but it's now taken on a whole new meaning. She's making dolls for children who don't see their physical appearance in the other dolls that are out there.
Amy Jendrisovitz is a former pediatric oncology social worker. She hand-makes dolls for children with physical differences that we don't usually see portrayed in toy stores. Her work is called A Doll Like Me Creations. She joined us in our Madison studio earlier this year. Amy, thanks for being here.
Sure, thank you.
Well, tell us about your own story. You grew up loving dolls and then you ended up making them.
Yes. So I played with dolls probably until it was socially not appropriate anymore. and this was just a natural way to keep doing it. I've sewn dolls for as long as I can remember. But in this capacity, it's been about 4 years.
All right. Talk about how you got a request for a very specific doll that got you started on this path.
So social media is kind of remarkable in this way. It's kind of one of those friend of a friend stories. And so a friend of a friend knew that I could make dolls. And she had a little girl who had her leg amputated. And so she wondered if I could do a doll for her little girl. And I did, because that's a really easy thing to do. And I had never thought of it before. And so I did a quick search on the internet to see what was available. And the images that you see typically of kids with differences are not only humiliating, but they're really demeaning. And so I realized this was a really underserved group of kids. And so within 2 months, I had 200 doll orders.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you can't keep up with that much. That's a lot.
Right. I've never actually, yes, I've never been on top of it. That's correct.
Now, talk about what it's like when you see a kid for the first time have a doll. Is maybe mind-blowing that yeah. looks like them.
So the funny thing, so out of all the dolls I've ever made, I actually have never seen a child in person get mm-hmm. one. So I really, really like pictures, and videos are... I mean, it's kind of like being a fly on the wall. Uh-huh. And some of those videos, in fact, there was one just the other day of a mom opening a doll of her son that died of cancer. And it broke me. It really, like, people ask, how do you not get attached? I don't know, because I do get attached. And watching that was just, I don't even know how to describe it. It was really... I have so much humility, I think, when I see that. So I love those videos.
Can you talk about some of the different designs of dolls you've done for kids with different appearances?
So initially, those 200 orders were just for kids with limb differences, limb or hand differences. Because you look at your 10 fingers and you realize there are a million permutations of a hand. So it went very quickly into... I've never seen a doll. Could you do X, Y, or Z? And so the next request was Chinese albinism. So I think if there's some type of a difference, I've probably at this point seen it or heard about it. Just because dolls don't look like the ones, or kids, I'm sorry, kids don't look like what you see on the store shelves.
Right. And I think for people whose kids do have dolls that look like them, they might not even think about this. I never thought about this, honestly.
Right.
Why is it important for kids to see toys, dolls, representation that looks like them?
So, I mean, let me just quickly tell you an interesting story. My little girl is 3, and after watching a Disney Princess movie, the first thing she said was, I wish I had blonde hair and blue eyes. And if you see her, she actually does. And so it shows you how early kids internalize this standard of what they should look like. And so you look at, for example, a child of color, or you look at a child with some type of a difference, or maybe even both, and you realize that they will never see themselves on a store shelf. And that's so important. Representation is, I think that dolls can do things that we never even imagine.
Speaking of the videos, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has one up of, I think it was a 14-year-old girl. She had a hand that looked different.
Yes.
There's an unboxing video, I think they
yes.
call them, online. And a very short video. I recommend people go track that down, because it's very powerful.
Oh, truly. And, you know, that it happened, first of all, and second, that somebody caught it on tape. It's a very... visible. If somebody says why are dolls important, I would tell you, you've got to watch that video.
Absolutely.
That's a snapshot of why.
There might be people out there, Amy, thinking, this is awesome. How can I help? Can they help? What can they do?
Sure. So, gosh, there's a million ways that they can. I think that we all crave to do something to help other people. This is a really tangible way to help kids. And so I do have a GoFundMe, because in my mind, none of these families should have to pay for a doll like this. It should be a gift on behalf of our community that we say, look, we've done you a disservice. We really do support you, no matter what you might think or what people, you know, might say to you. We really do support you, and you have a place at the table too. So I would love for this to ideally be a gift to all kids. So that's why I started a GoFundMe. Sometimes crafters will ask if they can make a quilt for the dolls or clothes. So I'm totally open. There's actually a Cub Scout group right now sponsoring a doll. They're going to sell cookies to buy one. So there's a lot of things we can do.
Okay, out there listening, I know we have toy companies in Wisconsin. We have artists, we have designers, we have illustrators. What would you say to them, so it isn't just a volunteer effort here, to say to them to reflect the people out there of different
yes.
races, with different disabilities and physical appearances?
So that's I'm really glad you brought that up, because I think that's the second part of these dolls is they're front and center because we're ready for a different narrative. And the narrative needs to be, look, we're going to represent all kids, the kids that are on commercials, the kids that are in movies, the kids that you see on the toy shelves, the kids that you read about. That needs to be the narrative. And I think that we're at the point where we're hungry for a different narrative.
Amy, thanks for the work you're doing, and thanks so much for coming up to the
studio
today.
Sure, thank you.
Amy Jandrusiewicz is a former pediatric oncology social worker. She handmakes dolls for children with physical differences that aren't usually reflected in commercial dolls. Her work is called A Doll Like Me Creations. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.